Welcome, Alicia. We're so happy to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, we seem to have a very similar interest in helping people to make changes in their lives. And I'm curious if you could tell our listeners about your angle in helping people to make that change.
Sure. Well, my passion is for neuroscience and, in general, how the brain works. So what I've seen through the years in my psychiatric practice is that we tend to manifest in our according to what's going on in our brain. So I've worked with everyone from homeless people to even well-known celebrities. And what I've seen is it doesn't seem to matter what their life circumstances are. So they may have every resource and power to make something happen or seemingly nothing. Yet so much of what they are able to achieve is determined by what's going on in their head. So as I listened to each person talk about what they wanted in their lives, I could also tell whether or not they were going to be able to achieve it.
That's fascinating. I mean, just by listening to them to know that. What are the clues to doing that?
Well, there's certain things that people say that tell you what's going on in their brains. So our brains are structurally set up to process information in a particular way. So if we're processing information in one way, we won't be able to process information any differently unless we change that brain structure.
Wow.
So you can have great ideas of what you want to do in your life, but you won't have a brain capable of helping you to achieve it.
So in other words, if I want to be a rocket scientist, that's probably not going to happen based on my hardwiring of my brain?
Well, if your current hardwiring isn't set up for that, it might not happen. However, if you change that wiring, then you might be able to do that.
Wow. So how difficult is it for people to change their hardwiring? It's amazing.
It's not that it's difficult. We've seen in neuroscience that the brain is able to change itself. So we've seen that we can make new connections using the structures that are there and start using different parts of the brain in order to achieve what we want. It does take some discipline. You do have to do something different or else you won't have any different changes.
Wow. Okay. So let me ask you then, what are exactly... You know, would, as an individual, as myself or the listeners, what would we be looking for, or how could we kind of get going in making our brains work for us?
Okay. Well, it'd be great if we could just decide to look at the world differently, just decide to look at it more positively, and then we'd be happier. But I have to say, it doesn't actually work that simply. What we've seen is that in neuroscience research, I'll just give you a little bit of background
sure.
as I answer that. So researchers have tried to determine with brain scans, so pictures of the brain that light up according to which part of the brain that we're using,
mm-hmm.
what's going on when somebody's happy or sad or however they're reacting to their environment. So there were some particular researchers at UCLA who did a pretty simple experiment. They put people into a scanner and they watched which parts of their brain became active as they showed them a rapid succession of photographs. And these photographs were designed to elicit happiness, sadness, and other emotions. So what they found is that in people who tended towards a depressed mood,
mm-hmm.
there was a particular part of the brain that became very active.
Okay.
And that part of the brain was the amygdala.
Okay. We all
and
don't. A big word for all of us, but somewhere in the brain there.
Yes. So the amygdala is the part of the brain that tells us what is important. So if we have a particular stimulus, something that would make us happy or sad, the amygdala tells us this is important, you need to react to it.
So from this research, it sounds like the scientists are really able to tell what part of the brain is overreacting at certain things from certain stimuli?
Right. So what they found is that in people who tend to be more on the depressed side,
mm-hmm.
their amygdala said that the sadness photographs were very, very important. So that amygdala lit up whenever there was a photograph about sadness. However, when there was a photograph about happiness, it was almost like the brain didn't even notice.
So it's like those of, like, people I know who they read the newspaper and all they do is focus on the negative things in the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
Is it that their brain just sees those pictures? Is that what happens?
Exactly. So they may actually have a brain that's learned or been genetically predisposed to really pay attention to the sadness or fear-provoking stimuli and ignore everything else. So if you tell them just to think happy thoughts, think more positively, they may not actually be able to do that unless they do some sort of changing in the structure that they have now.
Got it. Okay, wow. Okay, so tell us, how do we change that structure if we don't want to be, you know, either depressed or unhappy or just want to do something different?
Sure. Well, there are several different ways. I can go back to the study that I was referring to. What the researchers of that study did is they had the individuals go through what's called a mindfulness practice.
Okay.
So mindfulness is the ability to observe the present moment without judging or reacting to it. So that would mean as people noticed sensations, they were told just to label them.
Wow.
So they would label them, this is fear, this is sadness, this is happiness. But they didn't judge whether those emotions were good or bad, whether or not they should have the emotion. And they didn't react to them. They were just trying to label.
That's so hard to do. So hard.
It is. It can be very hard to do without judging. You hear a sound and you're just supposed to say, this is a sound, as opposed to this is a good sound or a bad sound.
Now, are we all capable of doing that? And is that sort of an exercise we should be focusing on?
Yes, we're all capable of doing this. And it's not that you would have to do this all day. So if you want to change the structure of the brain, it's similar to trying to change the body.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to the gym, work out a particular muscle, you'll see that it gets a little bit larger, even from a smaller workout. Obviously, if you want it to get a lot larger, a lot stronger, you would want to do more of a workout.
Mm-hmm.
But I would recommend that if somebody wants to do a mindfulness practice, wants to try to become less reactive, they should at least do about 5 minutes in the beginning, 5 minutes of just sitting there, noticing what's in their environment, and just labeling it without reacting.
And if we just do that practice, what actually happens? Or what should we notice as a result? Like in our arms, we'd notice our arms getting stronger. But what would we notice?
Well, that's a good question. And so what we've noticed in neuroscience, what those researchers noticed, they had the scans, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
What they noticed is that after several weeks of doing this, when they rescanned these individuals and showed them the same photograph, now a different part of their brains was lighting up. So
wow.
The amygdala wasn't so active anymore, wasn't telling the brain, oh, this is important with the sad photos. It was another part of the brain, the more intellectual, higher-ordered thinking part of the brain that was now lighting up.
So is the amygdala more the emotional part of the brain?
Yeah, it's helpful to think of the brain in two different parts, more the primitive part, so that'd be the part the amygdala is in.
Okay.
The primitive part is just supposed to help us survive, tells us this is important, we need to react to this, run, do something, fight, flee, all those sorts of things. That's in the primitive part of the brain.
Right.
The other part of the brain is more the intellectual part. It takes in information and actually thinks about it, makes decisions, planning, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So with doing this, it's not going to be as obvious as when you're working out at the gym and seeing a muscle get larger, but there is another part of the brain that's actually become stronger. And in addition, the reactive part of the brain has become weaker.
So we're actually exercising the intellectual part to really see it more rationally? Is that what's
coming? Right. Well, and to become less reactive.
Okay.
So instead of just, you know, if somebody says boo,
right,
there's a part of you that just reacts and jumps without even thinking about it, before you can even think about it. By getting that reactive part to quiet down, we now have the opportunity to think about what we're going to do or how we're going to respond before actually responding to something.
Right.
So if somebody in our previous example wanted to be happier, wanted to think more positively, now they can see that sadness-provoking newspaper article or other stimuli and say, okay, yes, this is sadness. However, there are other things that are good in here as well. They can actually become more intellectual about it.
Okay, so like last night my Comcast, my internet was not working, and I was getting very, very emotionally reactive talking to the Comcast person on the phone. So in that moment, I should practice more of that mindfulness. It would have helped me because I could see myself doing it.
Sure, it might have helped you. It's something that, like I said, takes discipline to actually change the brain. So you can use the practice just in the moment like that, just observing, I feel myself getting angry. I feel my heart rate going up. This is anger, just labeling it.
Mm-hmm.
For the part of your brain to actually not be so automatically reactive, you'd want to have done this for a while.
Okay, so that's the practice.
Right. So it's kind of like you go to the gym, you work out the muscles, they get bigger over time. You can do that exercise once, but it's not going to have the same effect as if you've been working the muscles out over time.
So
if you've been doing this with your brain over time, it'll work a lot better in the moment.
Okay, so what should we be focused? Is it things that we react to? Is that we should practice with? We talked about sadness.
No.
What should we practice with?
The idea is to practice with whatever is going on in the environment. So
okay.
I wouldn't probably recommend starting out with Comcast. That would probably be very difficult. I'd start out with just a pleasant afternoon, sitting there and just noticing what's going on in the environment.
Okay.
And then eventually bringing it to the situations that are more difficult.
Okay. So if I take a walk, I could do it then when I'm walking.
Exactly. That'd be a great idea.
Okay. Terrific. Very interesting. Very interesting. So what else can you do to change your brain so you can be more successful in what you want to achieve in life? What do you recommend?
Well, there's a lot of different things. And again, it goes back to the different parts of the brain. So we have that primitive part that we can try to make less active with mm-hmm. the practice that we just talked about. But you still have the intellectual part, which isn't always so perfect. So our intellectual part of our brain can get a little distorted in the way it processes information. So some other things we can do is really examining our thoughts
mm-hmm.
and figuring out which ones are distorted, because those
mm-hmm.
distorted thoughts can go on to make us have particular feelings.
I know. We've been working on that with my daughter about generalizing everything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something
and we
never,
all do it.
Yes, absolutely. So what would you recommend that we do? Because as you know, we're all busy people, but these things are fabulous to really help us be successful. If there's a couple things you would recommend, what would they be?
Well, doing that mindfulness practice is an easy, quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another
mm-hmm.
thing is to examine your thoughts. So we could even do, if it's all right with you, some examples. Okay. So there are certain thoughts that we know are distortions, that we know through research that these thoughts tend to make people unhappy.
Mm.
So you're having these thoughts, and we all have some of them sometimes, but we should notice if we are having these thoughts and then try to change those thoughts so that we can actually change the way we feel and then what we're able to achieve in life.
Okay.
So we could actually go through a list of these.
That would be great.
And I'm sure everyone will find some that they do, I hope. I certainly still do several. So there's a top 10 cognitive distortions that are done. The first one is overgeneralization. So
mm-hmm.
like you were talking about with your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
This is where people see a single negative event as a never-ending pattern of defeat.
Okay.
So for instance, if a bird craps on your window, you feel like they're always crapping on your window.
Okay.
And you ignore that every other day this week they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be overgeneralization. It's not necessarily true, and it tends to make you feel overwhelmed or unhappy.
Right. No, I can definitely see that one. That would be a big one. Right. So what do we do about that if we find either ourselves or our loved ones overgeneralizing? What do you think we should do?
Well, one thing, and your loved ones often don't appreciate this, so it's probably better to do it with yourself, but pointing out that it's not always true is the best way to start. So with an overgeneralization, recognizing that this is a single negative event, yes, it seems like it's always happening, but you can point out the fact that it actually didn't happen yesterday, didn't happen the day before. If you think my daughter never listens to me, you can try to remember, well, there is that day that she listened, and there was that one time she listened. And
mm-hmm.
so anything you can do to challenge the distortion.
Mm-hmm. Now, does this work with anybody of any age?
Yes, it does. I've done it with people of all ages.
Okay, terrific. Yeah, no, my daughter's actually younger, and she definitely knows. She's definitely, when we remind her of what you just said, it definitely works, and she agrees. So it's helping her.
Good.
And we have, at this point, we still have an opportunity to influence her. Should I say?
Yeah, of course. And even people in their 70s, 80s I've done this with, and it's pretty powerful.
Great, great, good. So what would be another one we should look at?
Well, another one, which is similar, is disqualifying the positive. So this would be rejecting positive experiences by insisting they don't count for some reason or another.
Okay.
So this is when you give someone a compliment and they just kind of ignore it because, oh, you're just being nice or...
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you need to say that. So this allows you to maintain your negative beliefs even when they're contradicted.
Well, you know, I've read some research recently about women specifically where when we always say, oh, wow, beautiful new blouse, they'll kind of slough it off and say, oh, this old thing, you know, I just picked it up here or it's in the back of my closet, you know, and they won't take it as, well, thank you. I know, I feel beautiful in it. What is that
right about?
Is it especially with women?
It does seem to be especially with women, and there's a lot of social pressure to not seem too haughty, not seem too full of yourself. So we're expected to disqualify the positive. But the problem is it becomes a pattern. So when we say we want something better in our lives, we want more success at work, for instance, if we're always disqualifying the positive, how are we going to bring in more positive experiences if we're always ignoring what people are trying to compliment us on?
Okay.
So it actually hurts people in the end.
Got it. So we should all say, just say thank you.
Just say thank you. And I always say, you know, it's almost insulting the person giving the compliment to say, oh, this old thing.
Right.
They're almost saying that person had no taste anyway. So
very good point.
Yeah,
excellent point. Excellent point. Okay, great. Is there another one or two that would be very important for our listeners to kind of think about?
Sure. Another one, and I'll admit I do this sometimes, is all or nothing thinking.
Mm.
So this is where you see things in black or white categories.
Okay.
So if you have a performance and you miss a note, say you're a musician, musical performance, miss a note, then the whole performance was a failure. Or, you know, your kid gets a bad grade, oh, I'm a horrible mother.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
It's all or nothing.
That is amazing, all right. Oh.
Yeah, so I think we all do that, and you can obviously see where if you start thinking of everything in one way or another, then you're missing out on a lot of other factors that can help you change and have other things that you want.
Okay, good. So what should we do if we have that kind of thinking?
Well, for the all or nothing thinking, again, it's questioning, it's challenging that distortion. So now that you know all or nothing thinking is a distortion, then you can start challenging it. So I missed one note. I was a total failure. Well, let's see. I also got 450 notes correct. Everyone did applaud. People complimented me. As you just start challenging that distortion, you get a more balanced view, and that tends to get rid of it.
Now, what makes sense to me is if somebody pointed this out to me, but it seems to me that it would be very difficult for me to see it in myself when I'm in it in the moment. So what do you suggest, you know, if we're trying to kind of become aware more of it for ourselves, is there something we can do?
Well, it takes practice. So what I would do is look at the list of cognitive distortions, get familiar with what they are, and start noticing when you do them. And then in the moment, like I was saying, start challenging them, getting a more balanced view.
Great. Okay, great. And you know what we'll do? We'll put this list of cognitive distortions on both our website and your website as well, so that if our listeners want to listen to it, look at them more closely, they can get a chance to do that.
Now, sure, it is available on my website at this time, so that would be great.
Okay. So you're really just saying, what I hear you saying, Alicia, is we need to practice our brain just as much as we practice any other skill we want to get good at, or any physical body to get ourselves stronger. It's really practice.
Sure, it really is, because what we don't think about is that we've been practicing one way our entire life. The brain is always going, always
on. Right.
And it's on autopilot. So if we wanted to do something different, we really have to change it.
Interesting. And how long does it take to change it, do you think?
Well, in order to have one type of change, it would take 30 days in a row.
Okay.
That's hot. So 30 days in a row consistently applying a new skill, a new idea, should cause change. Now, a lot of us won't get the whole 30 days in a row, so it seems to take much longer. If you take a few days off of it with your old pattern of thinking, you know, you have to kind of start over. So just like with an exercise program, the more days you do of it, the more likely it will work.
Okay. So I want to begin practicing this, so I want you to walk me through, kind of just coach me through, and our listeners can do the same. Let's say I want to get rid of my thinking about the disqualifying the positive, okay? Mm-hmm. So what steps, would you have me practice it? How should I practice not doing that? Is it in the moment, or is it just all the time, or what would you suggest?
Well, I would first suggest recognizing when you've done it. So even if you are in the midst of a conversation or an argument, you can't do it in the moment, recognizing later, okay, I had an example of disqualifying the positive, so maybe you have an example now.
I'll give you an example. So we are selling our book. We've just put it out there, just published it and gotten it out there, and had some fabulous experiences, you know, last Sunday at, you know, selling the book, people loving it, giving great feedback, love the cover, love the inside, got a couple good reviews, you know, and then of course the next week I did another show and, I didn't have as many people who bought the book. Now, you know, there are a variety of reasons for that when I go and analyze it, but one being that the demographics wasn't exactly right, but, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, I forget about the positive one.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember exactly what thought came up?
What thought came up? The thought that came up was I was too optimistic. It's questioning. Will people really like it? If people only have so much money to buy a book, why would they buy mine? You know, so trying to kind of just second guessing that we think it's the best book that people should buy.
Yes, it sounds like maybe even the thought was maybe this isn't such a great book.
No, I didn't have that thought because I really believe it's a great book. I kept thinking, I kept finding reasons like, okay, it's not the right demographic, which I don't think it was. So I kept finding reasons, but emotionally, I didn't feel good.
Right.
Now, I did have very high expectations that were probably out of sync with what should have been in that specific situation. You know, so that was part of it where my expectations were not quite where they should have been. You know, but it's that notion about getting back to being positive about it.
Okay. Well, I think, again, it's recognizing. So there's one thought usually in all that questioning. And so you're saying I started to question maybe this, maybe that. There's usually a particular thought that comes in. You know, it could be maybe I don't know how to plan these things or maybe the, you know, it sounds like luckily you don't question how good the book is. So really recognizing what is that central thought that's making you have all these questions.
Okay, so it's recognizing the central thought. That's good. So I think the central thought there was just I didn't pick the right environment. I didn't pick the right situation.
Okay, so that's a thought that we can work with. So I didn't pick the right situation. And you have a couple of different reasons that you came up with, the demographics, et cetera.
It was hot.
And it sounds like, it was very hot.
There weren't as many people as they said there would be, that kind of thing.
And so it sounds like that thought, though, made you not feel so great about it. You know, I didn't pick the right situation, didn't make you feel so great about it.
So
recognizing the thought, recognizing, okay, that didn't make me feel so good, so it might be a distortion. We know that disqualifying the positive is the distortion. So now in order to challenge it, we need to bring in other information. So is there other information as far as I didn't pick the right event? Was there anything positive that happened there?
Yes, there was actually a lot of positive things. In fact, we did sell some, so it's not like we didn't sell any. A lot of people picked up the bookmark, and they said they would take a look at later. I got the feeling that a lot of people were there not to buy, necessarily, but just to look, kind of have a good afternoon. So they weren't serious about buying. I think the other thing is that we got a lot of great feedback about the cover and about the title. We also gave out croissants to attract them to the booth, and that definitely was a winner. So I learned that. So we learned a lot in the process, and this being my first book fair, you know, I have to, you know, I try to be easy on myself, but I was so positive and optimistic about both the number of people who were going to be there and the kinds of people that my expectations were out of line.
Okay. Well, how did you feel as you were telling me the good things that happened, the people that did take the bookmark, the sales that did occur, the comments on
good.
The cover?
Yeah, that felt okay. good. That felt good.
Yeah, so when you're having that thought that makes you feel bad, if you can bring in more information to challenge that thought, then you can have more of a realistic interpretation of the event. So
okay.
It felt better whenever you brought in some of the information. It's not saying that the negative part wasn't true as well. It's just saying let's not completely disqualify the positives that happened.
Good. Okay, that's good. Because I did.
Bringing both of them in.
Right. So it's kind of like the old notion that I always talk about is learn from your experiences and try to really learn from them, which I try to do. But then once in a while that emotion, you know, when I was exhausted on Sunday came up and I'm going, okay, you know. So that's good. So just focus on what I did learn and the positive that came out of it.
Right. And this isn't the same as just the simple positive thinking model because
no.
a lot of people, you don't want to disqualify the negative either.
Right.
It's all part of your reality, all
right.
part of the experience.
So next time I would definitely check out the demographics and more specifically
right.
that type of thing. Okay,
right.
great.
So you got the learning plus you have some positive as well with
right.
it.
Right. Oh, this is good. So I think that example really helped the listeners. At least it helped me a little bit.
Good.
Well, it sounds like we do have opportunities. The good news is you're telling us that we can change our brain and our thinking to really help us to be more successful in life, which is wonderful. That is great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a question. Is there some way that the listeners might want to go? I know there was a brain quiz that you have on your website that you might want to tell them about that they might want to take to find out more about how they think now. Do you want to take a
sure.
second to explain it? Sure.
Sure, thank you. So on my website, what I've tried to help people do is recognize what's going on in their brains currently.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, there's the subconscious brain or the primitive brain. There's the intellectual brain. All sorts of different things can be going on that's creating the experiences you're having now. So one way of trying to figure out what might be going on is to take this brain quiz. It's pretty simple, just 10 questions. It's asking about stressful situations, and it's giving you a number of different options. And then you pick which one would be the one that you would have in that stressful situation. You may not have had the situation. It's just getting you to think in how you would react. And what that can do is help you figure out what type of brain you have. You'll get a report that tells you which type of brain you have under stress. And then it leads you to several different resources, such as the cognitive distortions list, and other writings that help you to look at this and make some changes.
Fabulous, fabulous. So what is your website they can find, if you can tell us?
Sure, it's www.scienceforthejourney. So all one word, scienceforthejourney.com.
Great, okay. So they can go to that, take the brain quiz, and see how their brain is reacting. That's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
That's fabulous. And if they want to contact you about more specific brain coaching, Alicia, how might they do that?
Sure. Well, they're listening to the right program. So I also offer professional guidance and individual sessions that I do conveniently over the phone. I found phone sessions tend to be the most convenient for people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they can actually find out for themselves individually what's going on in their brain and walk through some of the steps that they can take to change it.
Okay.
And so I do those sessions. There's information on my website about that as well. And as a special offer to your listeners, I'll actually be offering the initial session for half price.
Wow. So they should just say they were listening to the podcast with Suzanne and they'll get the deal, huh?
Sure, they can put in the code whenever they go to register, Healthy Joyful Living.
Great.
And that'll give them the half price.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Lizzie. I'm sure the listeners will be happy to do that. Well, this has been fabulous, and I tell you, I've learned a lot, and I am definitely going to focus on my mindfulness. I think I'm going to take that on my walking with me and try to really just look at what, you know, how to see things without judgment. And definitely notice some of the cognitive distortion that you talked about. It's great tips.
Great.
Well, I really appreciate you being on the show, and I know the listeners do too, and may we all get healthier and more joyful and have great brains that help us lead us to great success.
So, all right, well, thank you.
Okay, and you can find the show on www.healthyjoyfulliving.com, and you can email myself, Suzanne, at Healthy Joyful Living, or Alicia. And Alicia, what's your email if they want to email you?
It's Dr. A, so that's just D-R-A, at scienceforthejourney.com.
Perfect. Great. And thanks again, Alicia, and we will listen to you again. And lots of good luck to everybody.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us on the Healthy Joyful Living Podcast. For more information on becoming the leader or entrepreneur you dream of, both at work and home, contact me, Suzanne, at healthyjoyfulliving.com. As life is too short not to live both a healthy, joyous, and productive life at work and at home for your employees, yourself, and your family. Have a great day and live with joie de vivre.